So if you're a founder of a startup, maybe you need some brutally honest advice from somebody who's been there. For this episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast, I visit with Rand Fishkin. He is the founder and former CEO of Moz, and he's written a book that you're going to want to get into because it's got some really practical and heartfelt advice of what he learned along the way. This episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo. Klaviyo is a platform that helps growth-focused e-commerce brands drive more sales with super targeted, highly relevant email, Facebook, and Instagram marketing. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is Rand Fishkin. He is the founder and former CEO of Moz. I think people used to call him the Wizard of Moz. And he actually has a new venture called Spark Toro, which we'll touch on today. But we're going to talk a lot about his new book called Lost and Founder, a painfully honest field guide to the startup world. So, Rand, thanks for joining me.
John, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I said off air, but I'll say it on air as well. I've been doing this podcast forever, as a lot of my listeners know, and I can't believe this is the first time I've had you on. So it's a treat for me. So we are going to talk about your book, but I got to ask one SEO question, and it's a really broad one. Where does SEO sit today?
Well, it's at an interesting point in its history in that in a lot of ways, search has become a mature industry and SEO has too. And that means that it's more competitive than it's ever been. And for the first time, I think thanks to the growth of voice search and how Google is displaying answers, there's actually not the same amount, not the same acceleration rate of increasing opportunity in SEO. So it's sort of everyone is warring for more, more competition, but with less potential new opportunity. Yeah. So interesting time frame.
You know, I've been coaching a lot of business owners that I think there's an element of SEO that needs to be much more strategic. So as we plan their website, their messaging, their content, even SEO has to be a part of that. Even how we structure, you know, their entire business to some degree before we even start talking about, as you said, the technical aspects. And I think that's a message that's starting to make sense to people, maybe because it's gotten so competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's going to be very, very tough for businesses that tack on SEO as an afterthought to compete against the folks who bake it into their marketing DNA.
Right. Yeah. I've been doing this a long time, and I can't tell you how many small business owners would get a website built, put some form of content on it, and then come to me and say, "Would you SEO this?" And you used to be able to do that.
You did. I mean, that's the problem. The problem is, I think that, you know, the perception of the industry is always going to be 5 to 10 years behind where the industry actually is.
Yeah. So you use the word startup in the title, or at least the subtitle of the book. And that's such a term anymore that gets bannered around. I'd love to know kind of what you consider, if you have a definition of a startup.
Yeah, I think it's a company that is striving for rapid growth. And seeking to find a scalable, repeatable business model that works.
Well, isn't that every business?
Well, I would hope that most mature businesses are seeking to maintain their growth rate or maybe grow it a little. And most of them have already found a scalable, repeatable business model. So startups are unique from both those aspects.
And so the culture is unique. The point of view of the founders is unique. Maybe even the decisions they make from a profitability standpoint are unique.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and in many cases, right, a mature business, the founders are not involved anymore, right? In many long-standing businesses, the founders are retired or have passed away. In many other businesses, you know, that are mature, founders have left and they're off doing other things. But typically in startups, founders are still heavily involved. And so that changes culture and a whole bunch of other things. Yeah.
So this book is certainly a guide for somebody who's starting a business. So in that way, it's kind of a, you know, how-to book, but it's also very much a memoir. And so I'm curious, if you
if there was something that really compelled you to include the painfully honest part.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that I've always been passionate about. And part of that is, you know, the catharsis that comes from the release of writing about something. But a big part of it also is that when we share something that is not often shared, right, that the painful parts of a journey or the, you know, the hard issues, we help people to feel like they're not alone in their journey. And that is a really, really important aspect of all the work that I did at Moz, and that I think I'll ever do, is trying to, you know, hopefully forge a path for other people to follow in and to be able to feel less alone.
So, of course, while that is obviously an awesome contribution to the world of entrepreneurship, I suspect that it also, you know, in a lot of ways, you've got a new venture going. In a lot of ways, I guess the question is, what did you learn from it?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, I think, I mean, Lost and Founder is really exactly that. It's kind of a, hey, what are all the lessons that you're taking away that you wish you could have known before you started Moz? And trying to pass that on, you know, to a next generation of entrepreneurs, but also to myself. I mean, when you sit down and collect your accumulated knowledge and, you know, put it into a written form, I think you process it in a way that you would not otherwise be able to do. And so this is, you know, this is a very positive learning experience for me as well. And I think I hope, you know, it'll have a good impact on SparkToro.
So I've written 5 books now, and they are, you know, me postulating ideas, I suppose, which, you know, hopefully brings some value to the world. But the idea that I would also sort of share things that were painful, that showed that I was actually vulnerable, that I didn't have all the answers maybe at some point, was that scary at all for you?
Yeah, I think it's always scary. I mean, the difference between transparency and marketing, you know, or honest marketing, right, at least, is that when you're doing honest marketing, you are not telling any lies, and you are, you know, showing off the good things that you've done and things that you've learned. When you're being transparent, you are both being honest and wholeheartedly embracing the hardest, toughest, nastiest, ugliest parts of yourself and your journey, and exposing things that other people would normally want to hide, things that could embarrass you and make you look bad. And I think there's actually more power in that one, certainly from a representation and a, you know, helping people feel not alone part of it. You know, I'm going to tell you the Facebook story of how I, you know, became the third richest person in the world. Yeah. it's not that interesting to me, you know. Like, all right.
So you have a lot of fans. Obviously, your whiteboard Fridays. Is it Friday? Am I getting the day wrong? I forget. But
yeah, whiteboard Friday. Sure.
Sorry, had a momentary lapse there. Your whiteboard Fridays obviously had lots and lots of fans. So how has that fan base, if you'll call them that, reacted to the book?
I would say people who have known me and followed me for a long time, this book probably, you know, is a very good match. I think the one frustration, which Andrew Warner from Mixergy noted when I talked to him, was that, you know, there's maybe two or three chapters that touch on SEO and web marketing kinds of things. But this is not an SEO centric book. And of course, you know, most of the people who followed me historically over the last 17 years have done so because I'm in the SEO world and I help people, you know, learn more about that topic. So I think that it's a departure on that front, but hopefully, and I think for folks who have read it, which is a few, I don't know, something between 2,000 and 7,000 people, I think, have bought the book so far. You know, for those folks, it seems to be doing well. I get a lot of nice comments online so far, so
yeah,
we'll see.
Do you feel like, again, the world of what, you know, maybe it's a misperception about what startup life really is like. Do you feel like a lot of people who are starting businesses kind of look at the Silicon Valley sort of common advice and common model and really kind of fall prey to that in a not so positive way?
Yeah, well, I think one of the challenges is that Silicon Valley startups are built for a very specific asset class, venture capital, right? Which is an asset class that's designed to invest in, you know, 100 companies, and three or four of them will return the entire fund, and another 10 will be doing okay, and the rest will hopefully die because the partners don't even have time to engage with 100 companies, right? And you don't want to be putting money toward an investment that's not going to return, you know, 5x, 10x. So the advice that Silicon Valley startup world gives to companies is very good if you fit that model. And it's pretty bad if you don't fit that model. And I think the challenge is that, you know, popular media and culture and, you know, all of the focus of entrepreneurship, especially over the last two decades, has been so heavily centered, so heavily biased toward that model, that the vast majority of businesses, which are not in that vein and shouldn't follow that advice, sort of can't help but be seduced by it.
Yeah, well, especially since that's really all the media will talk about is that 1%
right.
that does it, right?
Yeah. You know, this is a big challenge. It's a challenge in all sorts of things, right? If, you know, if all the toys are geared towards, well, if you're a boy, you know, you have to play with army toys. If you're a girl, you have to play with princesses. Well, no wonder, you know, kids want to dress up as certain things for Halloween and act certain ways when they grow up. And
yeah, I always remember
you lose some of that freedom.
Years ago, I'd take my kids to McDonald's. Okay, I'm just going to admit it. We got the odd Happy Meal every now and then. And they would always say, do you want a boy toy or a girl toy? And I was like, what does that mean? It drove me
what
crazy.
Do I mean? Yeah. Why am I not allowed to play with dolls? And why are they not allowed to play with Transformers? I don't get it. Yeah.
All right. So now that you're starting another business, how long? 17, 18 years, Oz?
Yeah. So I dropped out of college in 2001. So this would be, 17 okay. years in.
So, and now you've got a new venture going. Would you say that your business point of view in general has changed?
Absolutely.
Guess if so, how so?
Well, so, I mean, I'm one of those people who absolutely fell prey to the, you know, classic Silicon Valley startup, right? Taking venture. That's the ultimate challenge and that's the ultimate goal. And that's what every entrepreneur, if you're a great entrepreneur, you know, you seek to do that. And of course, now that I've been through that experience, I sort of have the wisdom to say, hang on a minute. That's a totally biased perspective. There's no one class of entrepreneur that's so much better than another. You know, if you start a bakery, you are no less an entrepreneur than someone who starts a tech company. And if you raise venture capital versus getting a bank loan, you are no less or more of an entrepreneur. So I think those, you know, removing some of that external input is certainly a big thing. The other big one I'd say for me, at least, is having a lot more self-knowledge. So some of that's being able to, like, you know, push exterior forces away and recognize what I want. But also some of it is being able to say, okay, I know that I often fall prey to these problems or these mistakes. I know that I'm good at this and not good at that. I know that I need to shore up these weaknesses. And I know that I have challenges with, you know, hiring or whatever it is. And so I think that's why so many more entrepreneurs who start businesses in their, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s tend to, on average, have higher success rates than those who start them earlier in life. No surprise.
I want to remind you that this episode is brought to you by Klaviyo. Klaviyo helps you build meaningful customer relationships by listening and understanding cues from your customers. And this allows you to easily turn that information into valuable marketing messages. There's powerful segmentation, email autoresponders that are ready to go, great reporting. You want to learn a little bit about the secret to building customer relationships? They've got a really fun series called Klaviyo's Beyond Black Friday. It's a docuseries, a lot of fun, quick lessons. Just head on over to klaviyo.com, Beyond BF, Beyond Black Friday.
Well, so, and I'm not suggesting that that you started Moz for this reason, but would you say that you are now more sort of mission-driven than, say, innovation that could blow up and be a big deal?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Let's see. I would say in my, you know, life personally and broadly, I'm a very mission-driven person, but as far as the business goes, like SparkToro for me is not, oh, I want to, you know, solve this bordering on philanthropic problem. It's very much a, hey, this particular marketing problem that I kept seeing people have, and that I encountered a lot when I worked with newer companies or companies that for whom SEO wasn't a good match. That problem feels like it. There's a great technological solution that could help with it. So no, I think I'm still very innovation driven when it comes to product market.
So do you get, I'm assuming, a lot of startups or wannabe startups writing you and saying, what should I do first? Or where do I start? Or what's your one piece of advice, right? That everybody always likes to, the one thing.
Some combination or aspect of those questions, I think I get 2 to 3 emails a day, sometimes more.
So how do you, not necessarily how do you manage that, but do you have sage advice for the person that you decide, I'm going to sit down and write a long, thorough, fulfilling email back to this person?
Yeah. I mean, Lost and Founder has been great on that front because for a lot of the, hey, what should I do? What should I not do? How should I think about this? You know, there's a chapter for a lot of those items in the book. That being said, I think probably one of the most common ones I get, no surprise because of my background in web marketing, is, you know, where should I start my web marketing efforts and how should I, you know, attract my first customers? And for me, the answer to that is always sort of the intersection of three things. One, an area where you have personal passion and interest. I have never found, literally never found anyone who said, you know what, I hate Instagram, hate the whole platform. Ugh, it's terrible, but I do get most of my business that way.
Right.
Right? It doesn't happen. People who are not interested in or passionate about or have, you know, have some value that they can ascribe to that, they're just not great at it. So I tell people to pick a marketing channel that they personally like. If you hate SEO, you hate content marketing, fine, go for ads or, you know, PR or something else, right? The second thing is somewhere where you can add unique value. And the important word in that statement is unique. Many people can add value. Many people can copycat other people who are adding value. It's very difficult for a lot of organizations to recognize how they can add unique value. Why is this thing that you're doing more unique or uniquely valuable to the audience? And if you have a great answer to that question, and the first one, the third thing is you need to pick channels where your audience actually pays attention.
So you find
something at the intersection of those three.
But a lot of people really struggle with that uniquely valuable thing because they just, hey, what I created is surely it's valuable. And I find the best way to find those is find problems. You know, what are people complaining about? What are they not getting? You know, like when they leave reviews with competitors and they talk about they didn't show up on time or, you know, just whatever goofy things they're saying, those are the problems that you need to figure out.
Yeah, or problems where people are only solving them in one way, right? You know, for example, lots of people are having this problem and no one is helping those who prefer video content or those who like podcasts or no one's doing visual centric content or, you know, no one's solving this in a way that's accessible for whatever, an older demographic or, you know, that kind of thing.
I'm certain because of your kind of front of the, you know, leading edge, I suppose, SEO online stuff, you occasionally have people that say, okay, on this stuff that's coming, you know, what's coming next? So maybe just riff for a minute on, you know, voice search and assistants and AI and bots. And, you know, that seems to be kind of the thing that's got a lot of people's attention, but they're not sure if they should pay attention yet.
Yeah, well, so, okay, first off, my broad advice on this is that when you are investing in marketing, you do not need to and should not be leading your market. You should be following. And that sounds weird, right? Because we have this culture that's so innovation-centric, like what's the next big thing and how do I make sure I don't get left behind?
Right,
there's a first mover advantage. In marketing, there's a first mover advantage, but not until the market moves. So for example, I know a bunch of companies that invested very heavily in chatbots over the last few years. They were sure 3-4 years ago that chatbots were going to be the next big thing, and they built a bunch of tech around this. And those have not paid dividends for very many companies at all. In fact, I would say the majority of folks I've talked to who've invested there regret investing deeply. They still think like maybe in the next few years it will be something that consumers really want, but so far, meh, not so much. My broad advice is follow the market. Don't try and adopt something before it's popular. You know, don't be on whatever Kick, you know, that who went out of business, or Periscope or something like that.
Remember Plurk? I think it was called.
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
All right. So awesome. Tell us a little bit. I haven't given you much time to talk about SparkToro, but tell us about what you're trying to do there and who you're trying to serve.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So this is a product for sort of a lot of different marketers who encounter a consistent problem that we saw, which was basically folks would try and figure out, I have this audience I want to reach. Maybe it's a new audience because I have a new company, or I'm trying to expand my audience and grow. But I'm trying to reach this audience and I don't know where I should go to reach them. And because of that, I spend all my money with, you know, Google and Facebook, and the rest is sort of, I don't know what to do. And as a result, those behemoths become even more giant. When in fact, if you dig into any audience, there's almost certainly, you know, podcasts that they listen to and YouTube channels they subscribe to and people they follow on social networks. There's publications that they read and news media and blogs that they consume and online forums that they hang out in and events that they go to, right, offline, that places that they actually go to and participate in. And discovery of those different people and publications and sources is an incredibly manual, challenging, often weeks or months long process for a marketer to discover and uncover. And if you have to do it every 6 months or every year, it's even more painful. So that's what we're trying to solve with SparkToro through technology.
So how niche can you get with that? I mean, could you go down to, you know, some obscure form of engineering software company or something of that nature?
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that you could plug in, you know, something very broad, like I'm interested in reaching travelers to Southeast Asia. Or you could go for something more niche, like I want interior decorators on the West Coast, or you could go for something hyper niche, like I'm looking for mechanical engineers who work in clean water facilities.
Yeah. Wow. And what's the, obviously people can go to sparktoro.com and check it out, but what's the basic revenue play there?
Since we just started, it's going to be 9 months, maybe a little more away before we have any kind of product. So you can go check it out certainly and read a little bit more about the problem. And, you know, if you want, you can sign up and get an email when we launch, but there's nothing there yet. The eventual idea though, is that I want to do something very much like I did with Moz. I don't want to charge, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of dollars to use this product. I want this to be something that anyone can subscribe to and use, sort of a, you know, a search engine for marketers to figure out, to learn more about their audiences' affinities and where they pay attention.
Well, I think it's a brilliant idea. So I will certainly be on that waiting list of when you get it going. So,
thank you, John.
Thanks so much for joining us. And hopefully next time I'm out Seattle way, we can meet in real life and have a beer or something of that nature.
Oh, I look forward to it.
All right. Take care.